Well, I'm Hamid Aleph, six lines down, the second last word on the line where it says Vehechan Vani. Yesterday we began the seventh parak of Shavuos, and the opening Mishnah taught us that by the biblical oaths, the oath always takes the form of Nishba Velo Meshaleh. That is, we have the defendant swear that he really doesn't owe this money, and then he won't have to pay. The Mishnah presented a list of rabbinic oaths, in which the Rabbanan said the opposite, that for these rabbinic oaths, the plaintiff shall be nishba v'notel, he shall swear and then collect. In many of the cases, there is a specific reason to believe the plaintiff's claim. Therefore, the Rabbanan enacted that the plaintiff swears this claim and collects. The last case on the list was V'chen Vani Alpin Kaso, the storekeeper with his ledger. So we're up to where the Mishnah elaborates on this case, which is a little more complicated than the previous cases, for it involves, three different parties. As the Mishnah now explains, V'chen Vani Alpin Kaso Ketzad, what's the situation here with this storekeeper, with his little ledger? The Mishnah begins by telling us what it's not referring to. Lo shiyomer lo kosev alpin kosi sha'ato chayev li masayim zuz. We're not saying that if a storekeeper makes a claim, he says, it says here in my ledger that you owe me 200 zuz. We are not saying here that with such a claim, the chenvani could simply swear and collect that money. That's not true. For there's no particular basis to what the chenvani is saying. It says in his book that this guy owes him money. That's not evidence. If the defendant totally denies it, he won't have to pay. A motzi mechaver levarai, the one trying to take away money, normally has the burden of proof. Taking an oath would not suffice to collect in that case. Ella, rather, here's the case we're referring to. What happened was, Omer lo, somebody had said to a storekeeper, Tain libonai sasayim chitin, please give my sons two saw of wheat, and I'll pay you later. Or, Tain lipoalai selamos, where he requests of this storekeeper to extend credit and pay his workers, who owes the wages for work they did, should pay them a sela and smaller change. And sometime later, when the chavani comes to this employer, he says, I was going over my records, and we have a balance here. Who am Renosati? Chavani claims, my records show that I did fulfill your request, I paid your workers, and you haven't paid me back yet. Please pay me back for these wages that I covered for you. Meanwhile, Vehein Omrim Lono Talnu. The other party, the children or the workers, say, we didn't receive the money. Says the Mishnah, unfortunately for this employer, the halacha is, Hu Nishba Vinotel, Vehein Nishbain Vinotlin. Both of these parties are making a claim from this employer, both the storekeeper and the workers take an oath that what they're claiming is true, and they both collect. The employer will have to pay twice. This is based on a rabbinic decree. Without any rabbinic decree, the Torah law would be that this chinvani, the storekeeper, would not have the right to collect at all. Rather, he would have the burden of proof to prove that he actually paid the workers. But the Rabbanan said, by giving these instructions to the chenvani to go and pay the workers, and not specifying that he must do so in front of witnesses, it is evident that this employer trusted the storekeeper, that if he claims later he paid, then he is saying that he will trust him, he believes him. He took that risk. Therefore, the Rabbanan said, the chenvani later claims that he paid, even though the workers are saying they were not paid, chenvani can swear and collect that money. Now, as far as the workers, the halacha anyways, even without any rabbinic decree, is that they would have to be paid since the employer agrees that they worked for him. The question is, did he pay them? So if he can't prove that he did, the halacha would be that he would have to pay. The Rabbanan stepped in here and said, since the storekeeper is contradicting what they're saying, he's saying he did pay them, therefore the Rabbanan decreed that the workers have to swear before they collect. And the end result is that the employer will have to pay twice. The Mishnah presents a different opinion that disagrees with this halacha. Amar ben Nanos. Ben Nanos said, Ketzad eilu ve'eilu boin lidei shvua shav. How could we enact the halacha to have both parties swear, in which case, inevitably, somebody is taking a false oath? Therefore, Ben Nanos says this is not the halacha ella. Rather, the halacha is, Hu notel shelo b'shvua v'hei notlin shelo b'shvua. Both of the parties simply collect. Which again, as far as the workers, represents the basic Torah law. Ben Nanos is saying that the Rabbanan enacted here that since, once again, the employer trusted this chenvani, therefore the chenvani, if he claims he did extend the money, simply collects without any oath. The Mishnah continues with another case involving a chenvani. says the Mishnah, Amar lechen vani. Somebody said to a storekeeper, he transacted, Tein li bediner peiros, give me a dinar's worth of produce. V'nasin lo, chenvani, gave him the produce. And later, Amar lo, tein li osa dinar. Chenvani requested payment. He said, give me the dinar. Amar lo, the customer replied, Why nasativ lecha, nasativ be'un poli. I already paid you. I put the dinar in your unpoli, your money pouch. I've paid you already. The Mishnah says, the halacha here is, Yishava balabayis shenasa lo asa dinar. The balabayis, the homeowner, the customer, has to swear to his claim that he already paid, and then he's exempt. The Mishnah teaches, similar halacha would apply in the reverse case. It is, let's say, Omer lo tein li es haperos. The customer says, I've paid you already for the produce, now give me the produce. And the chenvani, in this case, acknowledges that he was paid. But Amrlo, the storekeeper, says back to him, Nasatim lecha v'alachtem l'toch b'secha. I've already delivered the produce to you. The customer says, no, I didn't receive it yet. Says the Mishnah, the halacha here is, Yishava chenvani. The storekeeper has to swear to his claim that he already delivered the produce, and then he will not have to pay. The customer, you know, cannot collect. The point of both cases is that, you know, the person who has, you know, current possession of the money in dispute, whether it's money or produce, wins the case, although the Rabbanan enacted here that since, you know, there could be confusion with these kinds of transactions, that the muhsik, the person in possession, does have to swear that he doesn't still owe this money or produce. The Mishnah brings a different opinion, which is Reb Yehuda Omer. Yehuda says that I disagree regarding the first case. When the customer claims that he paid already and the chenvani says, no, he didn't pay yet. Says Rabbi Yehuda, in this case, the guiding principle is, kol sha'peros biyado, yado alav al yona. Whoever has the produce, which of course is the customer in this case, has the legal upper hand. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda says, this customer doesn't even have to swear to uphold his position that he paid already. We simply believe him, because Rabbi Yehuda argues that presumably the chenvani would not give him this produce until the customer pays. For it's not a situation where this chenvani, you know, normally extends credit to this customer, so therefore the general assumption is that, you know, he won't give the merchandise until it's paid for. And so we simply believe the customer's claim and he doesn't have to pay, even without taking an oath. Mishnah presents a similar ruling. Amar li shulchani. Say a customer, he goes into a bank, you know, to a money changer, and asks, tein li bedinar mos, to exchange a dinar for smaller coins, v'nasin lo. And the money changer provides smaller coins worth a dinar. Amar lo tein li sedinar. And the shulchani then says, now give me the dinar. Amar lo, the Baal Bayis responds, what do you mean? Asati lecha, asati b'mpali. I already gave you the dinar and put it in your pouch there. Says the Mishnah, the halach in this case, as well, is that yishava Baal Bayis. And basically the customer wins, but he first has to swear that indeed he paid that dinar. And also in the reverse situation, if nasa lo asa dinar, if they both agree that the Baal Bayis already gave the dinar, Amar lo tein li samos, and he says, okay, now give me the smaller coins, give me the change. Amar lo, the shulchani claims, nesatim lecha v'shlachta l'toch kisecha. I already gave you the coins, I threw them in your wallet, your pouch. The halacha here is that, you know, basically the shulchani wins because he's in possession of the money under dispute. However, the Rabbanan enacted that Yishav HaShulchani, the Shulchani, must swear that he already exchanged the coins. But once again, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. In the first scenario, Rabbi Yehuda says that where the dispute is whether the customer gave that dinar, he needn't swear that he already gave the dinar, if that's his claim. Since Ein Derech Shulchani Litein Yisra Chiyitel Dinar, it's not normal for the Shulchani to first provide the requested smaller coins, the Yisar, until he receives the dinar first. And so we simply believe the customer. He says, yeah, I paid you already. And an oath is not necessary in that case. Mishnah now discusses other cases where an oath is imposed. Says the Mishnah, Kishem She'omru. Just as Chazal have said elsewhere, that is in the Mishnah in Ksubis, on Pezayin, we find the following halacha, that first of all, Hapogemes Ksubasa. A woman who has diminished her Ksuba payment, that is, she has already collected part of her Ksuba. Rabbanan said, the halacha is, Lo tipara ella b'shvua. She may not collect the balance if that's contested by the husband. Say, you know, he divorced her and he says, I paid the whole thing. She says, no, you only paid part. Even though, I mean, a Tara, she would not have to swear because she has a document. However, the Rabbanan said, in light of the fact that she acknowledges that part of it was paid, she must swear that he still owes the balance before collecting. In addition, the halacha is ve'ed echad me'ida shehi perua lo tipara labishvua. If one witness had testified that she was already paid her ksuba, again, even though that does not obligate her mina Torah to swear since she has a document that says that this money is owed, still the rabbanan enacted that she has to swear before collecting. In addition, if she's collecting mina chasim mishubadim, that is, let's say, for example, her husband divorced her, so now she has a right to collect her ksuba, but her husband has no assets, for he sold everything to a third party. She, as the holder of this ksuba, would have a lien on any land that her husband had sold, and so she has the right to go and collect the land, to seize the land from the third party who had been sold to. The Rabbanan said that she first must swear that she's really owed the ksuba. And also, minichse yisomim. If her husband had died, and now she wishes to collect her ksuba from the estate, from the orphans, lo tipar lebishvua. She cannot collect until she first swears that she, in fact, is owed the ksuba, was not paid yet. Also, v'hanifras shelo b'fanav lo tipar lebishvua. The Rabbanan also said that in a situation where a woman seeks to collect her ksuba, and she's not in the presence of her husband, he's not in town, for example, he sent her a get, he sent her a divorce document from overseas through an agent, and she wants to now, you know, with her ksuba, seize property from her husband to pay for her ksuba. The Rabbanan said, lo tipar lebishvua, she may only do so if she first swears. So says the Mishnah, just as the Rabbanan required a woman to swear in all of these situations before collecting her ksuba, v'chein ha-yisomim lo yiparu ela b'shvua. So too, orphans who inherited ownership of a debt, like someone owed their father money, they may only collect that money if they first swear. As the Gemara will explain, it's referring to where the defendants also are orphans. And so we don't make any exception by these plaintiff orphans that they have to swear just like anybody else is collecting from property of orphans. And what do they swear exactly? Shvua, they swear that shelo pokadnu abba, that first of all, our father did not let us know on his deathbed that the debt was already paid, velo amr lanu abba, nor did our father tell us at any point, and shelo matzina bin shtarasav shel abba, we didn't find evidence, so a document among his documents, no evidence whatsoever, sheshtar ze perua, that indicated that this document of debt that we seek to collect with now has been paid already. That's what they swear, as per a rabbinic enactment. The Mishnah brings an opinion here. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka Omer, afilu nolad ben la'achar misas av, even when the orphan in question was only born after the father had died, which of course precludes the possibility that the father would have communicated to this orphan that the debt was paid already, still Hareza Nishba V'notel. Still the requirement to swear before collecting this debt that someone else owed the estate is necessary, and meaning that they would still swear that we didn't, let's say, find a document, a receipt stating that the money was received. Mishnah continues, Amar Reb ben Shimon ben Gamliel, Im Yesh Edim Sh'amar Ha'av, V'shas Misasa, Shtar Zeh Eino Perua. In case, however, there were witnesses that testified that the father at the time of his death declared that this document has not been paid for yet, who no tell shelo b'shvua. In that situation, the orphan son may collect without any oath, for it's clear that the debt was not paid yet. The Mishnah continues, ve'elu nishabayin shelo b'taina. In the following cases, an oath was required by the Rabbanan, even though there's no regular kind of, you know, claim prompting them to swear, as the Gemara will explain. It means that, you know, even though these are all situations where the plaintiff did not submit a tainas bari, a definite claim, he said, maybe you owe me money, yet such a claim is enough to generate an oath obligation in these various cases because of a particular concern in each case that maybe, in fact, this person did unlawfully take money from this other party, from the plaintiff. And here are the cases, a shutvin, if you have an arrangement of partners, and one partner says that maybe the other partner was taking from the venture, v'arisin, or similarly sharecroppers, v'abitrupin, or, you know, managers of an estate, v'aisha noses v'nosenes v'toch habayis, or if the wife was put in a managerial position, she handled business affairs for the estate, and a family member, you know, questions that maybe she was not being honest here, taking some of the money for herself, uben abayis, or maybe a different heir, the estate was managing the affairs of the estate. So the same halacha would apply there. Namely, that if an affected party would approach this person and say, I think it's possible that you have been unlawfully, you know, taking some of the money from us, The Mishnah says, let's say Amrlo, the defendant responds, Ma tatoneni? What exactly are you claiming from me? The plaintiff says, Ritzoni shetishav ali. I want you to swear to me that you have not been taking any of the property illegally for yourself. Says the Mishnah, Chayef. Indeed, the defendant here will have to swear that he has been honest, he hasn't taken any of the money for himself. The Mishnah adds, though, if chalku ashutvin v'arisin, if the partners, the sharecroppers, had already dissolved the partnership, and at that time, finalizing the division of the assets, an oath was not requested, which just says, ein yochol hashbio. You can't later come back and say, I want you to swear, I suspect maybe you took something for yourself. Because the Mishnah at that point, it would be too late to put in such a request. Although the Mishnah says, if nisgalgo lo shvuo mi makom acher, if the plaintiff in question had some other separate claim that generated an oath obligation, well then, megaglin alav es hakol. Then, through the principle of gilgal shvua, the court then would also force the defendant to swear about the previous issue about that partnership, whatever this specific case was. That's the idea of gilgal shvua. And the Mishnah concludes, v'hashvias shametes es hashvua. The Mishnah teaches that the shemitah year, shvias, not only does it cancel an outstanding debt, somebody borrowed money, he doesn't owe any more at the conclusion of the Shemitah year, unless certain steps were taken to structure the loan to avoid the Shemitah canceling it. Shemitah also cancels an oath obligation. That is, if there was a court case, somebody, let's say, admitted to part of the debt or a single witness testified about the debt, so that an oath obligation was generated, but he hadn't sworn yet. When the Shemitah year passed by, reached its conclusion, and that oath obligation is canceled. Shemitah also cancels a debt oath obligations, and the Gemara will darshan this from the Pasuk. The Gemara begins that our Mishnah started with a rule that kol anishbayin shevetara anishbayin velo mishalmin. All biblical oaths are imposed on the defendant. The defendant swears that he does not owe the money and that he does not pay. And the Torah does not put the oath on the plaintiff, that he swears and collects. The Gemara asks, Minolin, from where do we know this? The Gemara explains, the Omar Kra, source for this rule is the passage that deals with a Shomer Sachar, a paid watchman, who was claiming an exemption. He claims that the property was lost through an unavoidable accident. So the Torah says, he shall swear that that's what happened, and then says the Pasuk, V'lokach b'alav v'lo yishalim. The owner of the property shall accept the oath of the watchman, and the watchman shall not pay. So the Gemara says, the Torah stresses this to teach us that that's the way it works. It is, Misha, alav l'shalim lo shavua. It is always the one who would otherwise have to pay. He is the one who swears in different situations. If the Torah allows him to be exempt through a shvua, he'll be the one to swear and be exempt. And again, it's not the plaintiff who would swear and collect. And the Mishnah then presents the list of rabbinic oaths that were applied to the plaintiff that he swears and collects. And the first case was a sachir. It was a worker. The worker claimed it was not paid yet. The employer said no, he did pay him. Rabbanan enacted that the worker here, who's the plaintiff, shall be nishbav an oath that he swears and he collects. The Gemara wants to know, Maishna sachir detakinu le'rabbanan demishtaba v'shakel. What is different about this case? What is the rationale why the Rabbanan enacted this halacha here? The Gemara answers, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halachos gedolos shanu kan. Mighty halachos were taught here. Great halachos. The word halachos implies that this is like a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. That is a biblical law that was transmitted through the Masorah from our Sinai. The Gemara questions this description. Halachos, hani hilchasa ninu? Are these halachos from the Torah? Are these biblical laws? They are not. These, of course, are rabbinic enactments. The Gemara modifies, Ela ema takonos gedolos shanukan. The Gemara now describes this halacha as great enactments. Like, true, they're enactments from the Rabbanim, but they're great enactments. The Gemara wonders at this language too. Gedolos mechlal dike ketanos. These are great rabbinic enactments. Are there lesser rabbinic enactments then? What does that mean, that they're great? Any rabbinic enactment has the full force of halacha, so what is it saying? The Gemara again modifies, Elam Rav Nachman Amr Shmuel, Takonos Kivuos Shanukan. Shmuel's statement was that these rabbinic enactments were particularly forceful. They were keva, really set down to the degree that Akrua Rabbanan Lishvua mi Balabayis Vishadyua Asachir Mishum Kidechayov. With this enactment, the Rabbanan uprooted the normal halacha. that normally, as mentioned above, if you're dealing with a biblical oath, the Torah says the defendant swears and is exempt from paying. Yet the Rabbanan came along here, and once they decided there's a situation where an oath is appropriate, they did not place that oath on the defendant, but rather placed it on the plaintiff, which here is the worker. And now the Gemara reveals the reason for doing it this way. It is Mishum Kedei Chayev, out of concern for the worker's livelihood, like his wages, his livelihood is on the line here. Therefore, the Rabbanan favored the worker with this enactment, and therefore granted him the right to swear to his claim that he wasn't paid yet, and then he'll collect. The Gemara questions this rationale. Mishum kidei chayev de sachir katsinale lebalabayis, but is that fair to the employer? If normally the halacha would assume in favor of the employer, you're going to rule against the employer because you are concerned about the worker's livelihood. That doesn't seem to make sense. The employer also has his rights. The Gemara responds, and no, the balabayas is agreeable with this. Balabayas gufei nichale de mishtab esacher v'shakel. The employer is okay with the idea that if a dispute like this arises that will rule in favor of the worker, he has the right to swear and collect. In order so that he won't have a hard time finding workers to hire. For if the halacha was more tilted in his favor, the employer's favor, then workers would be less interested contracting to work for other people, knowing that if maybe there's a dispute later, I'll be out on my money. But the Gemara responds to this, you could argue just the opposite, that a worker doesn't mind if the halachas are set up in favor of the employer, ki heichid ligrei balabayis, in order to ensure that employers will actually be willing to hire workers. That willingness might be jeopardized if you skew things in favor of workers and you say that should a dispute like this arise, the worker can swear and collect. But the Gemara responds that no, this is not a consideration for a balabayis al karche agar. Whether he likes the rules or not, employer has no choice. He's forced to find workers, and when he needs work done, he's going to have to find those workers. But the Gemara says, if you can argue that, sachir nami al karche mitkar. A worker also essentially has no choice but to offer himself for hire in order to make a living. So if you go down this path, it's not clear why the Rabbanan would allow the worker to swear and collect, rather than go by the normal process the Torah says of having the defendant swear and be exempt from payment. So the Gemara now explains the rationale of why the Rabbanan enacted the oath this way. Ella, rather, the understanding is balabayis tarud bepoalavu. The Rabbanan's logic was, and they actually give more credence to the worker's claim that he was not paid yet, because the reality is the employer is preoccupied with his different workers. He's running a whole operation here. And so he could easily have lapse in memory, and he falsely recollects having paid the worker. Since the Rabbanan give more credence to the worker's claim, he therefore is granted the right to swear that he indeed wasn't paid, and then he collects. The Gemara wonders that if essentially the Rabbanan are saying that we believe the worker over the employer, v'leisiv lei b'lo shvua, why don't the Rabbanan simply allow the worker to collect without even having to swear? The Gemara answers, even though it's true that in terms of the credibility of the worker's claim, we essentially believe him, so he should be able to simply collect. However, we do have him swear first, kedei lahafiz daito shabalabayis, in order to set the employer's mind at ease. The employer might feel that it's unfair, that we're simply believing the worker. He might very well feel that, no, I remember that I paid him, and it's not fair that he simply gets to collect. And so to appease the employer, we do require the worker to swear that he really wasn't paid yet before collecting. The Gemara asks, seemingly there could have been a different solution here, v'leisiv lei be'edim, that is, to require an employer to always pay his employees in front of witnesses. Then there'll never be any doubt. If there are witnesses that testify that he was paid, then fine. If not, then we assume he wasn't paid. The Gemara answers that tricha lei milsa, practically speaking, that would be difficult to implement. Every single time he pays a worker, he has to have witnesses present. It's not practical. One wonders, but couldn't there have been a different solution? V'leisiv lei meikara, that is, why didn't the Rabbanan enact that employers always pay their employees beforehand, before the beginning of the day, before they get their work done that day? And that too would avoid any oath. It would be a system that is always paid beforehand, so there's no questions. Gemara answers that this too would not be practical, since Shnein Rotzin Bakafa. Actually, both parties prefer the system where the worker is paid after his work at the end of the day. For the employer, this is more convenient because he may not have the cash at hand to pay him right in the morning. And so pay the worker at the end of the day when the work is complete, and the worker himself doesn't mind this arrangement at all. He'd rather not have the money on him that he might lose. While he's at work, so he'll take the money at the end of the day after he's finished the work. That's why the Rabbanan did not opt for that solution. Turning to Amid Beis, the Gemara now has a different question, which is, Ihachi. If so, once we understand this enactment here that the Rabbanan, assume that the worker is telling the truth that he wasn't paid yet because often the employer gets preoccupied with running his business, well then seemingly a filu katsatz nami. Seemingly then the enactment should apply even where the dispute centers around how much the wages were set at. We should again rule in favor of the worker that if he claims a larger amount was stipulated, then he should be believed to swear and collect the larger amount. So the question is, Allah Matanya, why though does the Braisa teach that in fact the halacha is, Uman Omer Shtayim Getzatzta Li? Let's say, for example, the worker claims that you stipulated two Saloyim to do the job, but the client, the employer, says, no, I'd only stipulated for you one sell a coin. The Braisa rules, the one who's trying to claim the money under dispute, which of course is the worker, the Uman, the professional, he has the burden of proof. If he can't prove that they had stipulated two, then he won't be able to collect that additional seller. So the Gemara wonders, why don't we say here too? That the employer is tarud b'polav, he's busy, preoccupied with all his different workers, and so there's a very good chance that he remembered incorrectly. He thought it was only one, really it was two. And so why don't we say here also, the worker can swear and collect the additional seller? The Gemara answers that no. K'tzitza v'ade mitker dokir le. When it comes to the issue of how much he stipulated, how much he set his salary at, how much wages he had agreed to, that's not something that he'll forget. It's only like through the busyness of the day, did I pay this one or pay that one? That's something that he might get confused about. He might not remember correctly, but there's no assumption like that regarding the amount of wages. That he'll remember. And therefore, when that's the issue, we go by the regular rule of whoever's trying to take away the money has the burden of proof. But the Gemara asks a further question, that if so, again, if you're telling me that basically the Rabbanan said that an employer is busy with his workers, and so he might forget whether he paid a particular worker, seemingly then a filu avar zmanu nami. Even if we have passed the time by which the employer is supposed to pay his worker, for example, if you have a day worker, the Torah says, before sundown, the employer must pay his worker. Otherwise, it's a serious sin. It's a prohibition of baltalin. You shall not, withhold the wages. You pay right away. By the end of the day, seemingly, even if the worker only ended up claiming his money after that time had passed, we should continue to say that we assume like the worker and let him swear and collect. So the question is, Allah Matanya, why does it say in the Braisa that if Avar Zmano Velo Nasan Lo, if after the day already went by, it was already like the next day, and then the worker comes in and claims that he wasn't paid yet, says the Braisa, in this case, Hareze Eino Nishba Vinotel. The worker no longer has the right to swear and collect the payment. Rather, we rule in favor of the employer, and the worker would have to prove that he wasn't paid yet. What do you mean? I thought we just said that, the halacha presumes, like the worker, that the employer forgot because he was busy running his operation. The Gemara answers that in this situation where it's over zmano, we say chazaka in malabai is over bebaltalin. Presumably, an employer would not transgress the serious sin that the Torah says of shall not withhold the wages past the time. As such, in this situation where basically the worker is suggesting that the employer did just that, he violated baltalin, withheld the wages, we assume, like the employer, that he did pay, and therefore, in this case, the employer wins the case. The Gemara questions this answer. What do you mean? But didn't you say that there is a reality that the employer is very busy with his workers, so he might have not remembered correctly? So how do we understand this exactly, that all of a sudden, once the deadline arrives, where the Torah says it's now a sin if the person, the employer, didn't pay him yet, now he will remember? The Gemara answers, that's right. For hani mili mikmei delimatiz man chiyuvahu. We said above that the employer might not be keeping track so carefully, he might have remembered incorrectly because he's busy with the other workers. That's only within the time period where he's still, within his legal obligation to pay on time. However, kimatiz man chiyuva, once it's down to the wire, we're actually at the point where it becomes a biblical transgression to continue withholding the wages, we say, Rami anafshei mitkar. Surely the employer will concentrate more, will focus on this, and you'll make sure You know, double check with himself. You know, did I really pay this person? He wouldn't want to violate a biblical transgression of the Torah. And so if the court case came up only at this point, then, you know, we no longer say that he might not, you know, be remembering so carefully. Rather, no, he will focus on this and he will accurately recall whether he paid this person or not. And that's why in this case, the employer wins. However, the Gemara points out that seemingly this kind of argument is not an argument that's specifically in favor of the employer. For v'chi sachir over mishum bal tigzol, you're telling me the employer would not violate the biblical transgression to fail to pay on time, but would you suggest that a worker would go ahead and violate a biblical transgression of stealing, which of course is exactly what he would be doing if he is lying here and if he's collecting twice? So seemingly, you know, this point, you know, cancels out the consideration on the employer's part. Yeah, you can make the same argument for the worker. And so we should fall back on the assumption that, you know, there is an edge here for the worker because the employer doesn't always remember so accurately because he's busy with all the different workers. However, the Gemara answers, Gabi Bala Bayis Ika Tre Chazaki. There are actually two presumptions here in favor of the employer. Chada, the Im Bala Bayis Uvim Bal Tal. And the first one was mentioned already, that presumably, you know, one would not violate the biblical transgression not to pay on time. V'chada, the Ein Sacher Mashes Charo. In addition, there is a presumption here that a worker would not delay collecting his wages. What took him so long to collect his wages? The wages were already due yesterday. Why did he wait until today to collect the wages? So that's another indication against the worker's claim. That's why in this case, the Braisa says the employer would win. The Gemara now makes a qualifying statement, which is Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel Lo Shanu Ela Shesachro Be'edim. Salacha, we're learning that we would rule in favor of the worker who's claiming he wasn't paid yet. And the Mishnah says, okay, so he swears and collects the payment. It says Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, that's only if this worker was hired in the presence of witnesses. Avo Sachu Shelo Be'edim. But if not, and the worker will lose the case. And the reason is Mitoch Sheyachal Lomer Lo Lo Sechar Ticha Me'olam. Since in this situation, the employer, if he wanted to lie, he could have simply said, oh, I never hired you. What are you talking about? Never happened. Since he could have said that, therefore, Yachal Lomer Lo Sechar Ticha V'nasati Lecha Secharcha. We therefore would believe his actual claim in court, which is that he paid this person's wages already. It's called the Migu argument, that, you know, clearly this person is not a liar, because if he wanted to lie and get out of this, he could have made a simpler, you know, false claim. So in this case, the employer would win the case. Amar Leir Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak said to Rav Nachman, Yashir, very good. V'chein Rav Yochanan, so said Rabbi Yochanan. He made the same distinction. The Gemara remarks on Rabbi Yitzchak's language that, you know, Rabbi Yochanan said this. Mechlal de poligale Rish Lakish. This implies that Rabbi Yochanan's close peer, Rish Lakish, the Chavrusas, and, you know, if they said the same thing, presumably he would have quoted, you know, Rish Lakish as well. So does this mean that Rabbi Yitzchak is saying that Rish Lakish disagreed with Rabbi Yochanan on this? The Gemara says that no. Ikidiyamri, those that say that it doesn't necessarily mean Rish Lakish disagreed, because what happened here was Mishta Haveshasilai Rish Lakish was having a drink while Rabbi Yochanan was presenting this teaching, and therefore Veshasilai, that's why he didn't object to Rabbi Yochanan's ruling. Rabbi Yitzchak, you know, left the base medrash before he could, you know, continue to observe and see if Rish Lakish would react, and so he couldn't tell whether Rish Lakish agreed or disagreed. Or Ikidiyamri, those that say Mishta Haveshasilai, the Rish Lakish, he wasn't drinking, but he simply would wait for Rabbi Yochanan to finish the whole discourse. And if he disagreed, which was often, he would wait until afterwards. Vishasagle, so he was quiet the whole time. And again, the point is Rabbi Yitzchak simply didn't see whether Rish Lakish reacted and disagreed or not. So we couldn't tell. That's why he didn't quote Rish Lakish, but it wasn't because he knew for a fact that Rish Lakish disagreed. The Gemara quotes another Amora that echoes the above Itmar Nami, and it was also stated on Rav Menashe Bar Zvid Amar Rav. If this worker had been hired not in the presence of witnesses, then again the employer will win from Yitzchak, since he could have simply claimed, I never hired you to be my worker. He would be believed to claim that he did pay the wages. Amar Rami Bar Chama, Chama reacted to this. He said, "Kama me'alya shmeisa. How wonderful this teaching is! This is an excellent teaching." Amar Le Rava, Rava said back to Rami Bar Chama, "My malyusa, what's so excellent about this teaching? I think there's a problem with this teaching." Freem Cain, if this is really true that we say this migu, well, that seems to create a problem. For if that's so, Shavuas Shomrin the Chayiv Rachmana Hechi Mishkachas La. And seemingly, you can never have an actual case of the situation the Torah talks about of Shavuas Shomrin. Or let's say you have a paid watchman who claims that, you know, the property was lost, but it was an unavoidable accident, and therefore I should be exempt from payment. The Torah says, the halacha in this case is, that the watchman would have to swear that indeed it was an unavoidable accident, and then he'll be exempt from having to pay. Rava points out, this seemingly can never happen according to the above theory. For the shomer should always have a migu, namely, mitoch sheyachal lomer lo lo yidvar miolam, since this watchman technically could have just said, you never made me your watchman. And that would have been like a simple way to avoid any kind of liability. Therefore, according to what you're suggesting, we should say that he simply believed now when he says an unavoidable accident occurred. And since there's a, you know, a clear migu reason to believe him, he shouldn't have to swear. And yet, of course, the Torah says he does swear, but, you know, why would that ever be? Why would he ever have to swear if your migu theory is true? Rav Rachama answers that no. Could say the Torah's halach here by this Shomer Sachar is still relevant. The Afkin Lei Be'edim, in a case where this watchman was commissioned in the presence of witnesses, which of course precludes any migu argument. He has no option to later say, oh, you never made me a Shomer. No, we have witnesses here. And in that case, the Torah says, if he did claim that an unavoidable accident occurred, that's why the property was lost, he would have to swear. The Rava persists, there still should be a migu. Namely, we should say that mitoch sheyachal lomer lo hechazar tivlach, being that if this shomer wanted to, he could have simply said, I returned the property to you already. Yachal lomer lo nensu, we should believe his claim when he claims that an unavoidable accident occurred. So there should still be a migu. And therefore, again, it's not clear. Now, what's the Torah's case here? Where the Torah says, no, he has to swear before he'll be exempt. Rami Bar Chama answers, the afkid lei b'shtara. The answer is, the Torah is referring to a situation where the arrangement that this person watches property was recorded in a document. And the owner still has this document. When he's claiming it from the shomer, he says, hey, where's my property? So if the shomer were to say, oh, I gave it back to you already, that would not be believed. Because the owner says, oh yeah, if you gave it back, why do I still have the document? And so when the shomer chooses to claim, oh, an unavoidable accident happened, therefore I'm not liable, Torah says, only be exempt if he takes an oath that, in fact, it was an unavoidable accident. The Gemara makes an observation on the above conversation between Rav and Rami Bar Chama. The Gemara observes, Mechlal de tarvayu svir lehu amafkid etzach avero be'edim ein tzarch lachsel be'edim. It is evident that both of these Amorayim hold that even if the owner entrusted his property to this shomer, this custodian, this watchman, in the presence of witnesses, there is no automatic assumption, there's no implied stipulation that the shomer will have to return the property in the presence of witnesses. For if there was such an automatic stipulation, well then, you know, Rava's last question, where he wanted to argue that there's still a migu in this case, where the owner entrusted the property to this watchman in the presence of witnesses, and Rava said, well, he has a migu. When he claims that an unavoidable accident occurred, we should believe him, because if he wanted to lie, he could have simply said, oh, I returned it already. Now let's think about that question. Perhaps you could say that that claim would not have been believed. If he would have claimed I returned it, the owner maybe could say back that, prove it. I gave you the property in front of witnesses, so that meant that you're required to return in front of witnesses. Where are the witnesses? You testify that you gave it back. And yet Rava presumes that no. The shomer would be believed if he claimed that he returned it. And so evidently, in spite of the fact that the property was entrusted to him in front of witnesses, it doesn't mean there's no automatic, you know, stipulation there that he has to return it in front of witnesses. And from the fact that Rami Bar Chama responded to the question with this, you know, other answer, he said, the answer is, they did it with a document. So clearly, Rami Bar Chama agreed with Rava's premise that the fact itself that he gave the property to the watchman in front of witnesses did not require the shomer to return the property in front of witnesses. We can also glean from the above conversation that if, however, the arrangement with this custodian was recorded b'shtar in a document, that then tzarich lachzer lo be'edim. Then indeed, the shomer will not simply be believed to claim, oh, I gave it back already. In this case, the owner could say, prove it. Since, you know, I have a document that says I gave you the property. If you really returned it, then, you know, you should have destroyed the document. Or, you know, if you have witnesses that could testify you returned it, that would be fine. But in the absence of that, I don't have to believe you. We see that that's their opinion in a case where The arrangement was recorded in a document. Moreh continues to discuss this distinction that was taught above, that again, if this worker was hired in the presence of witnesses, they would not rule in favor of the worker. He would not be able to swear and collect if he claimed he wasn't paid. Moreh says, Kari Rami Bar Chama Alei Rav Sheshes, Rami Bar Chama applied the following pasuk to Rav Sheshes. The pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, it describes of Ayasem David Sadvar Moela Rilevavo. David HaMelech placed these words in his heart. It's another idea of like focusing on something. So Rav Chama was saying that Rav Sheshes, you really focused on this teaching to try and determine if it was correct. For the Ashkechei Rav Sheshes, L'Rabba Bar Shmuel, Rav Sheshes once encountered Rabba Bar Shmuel Amrle, and he said to him, Toni Mar Midi B'Sachir, did Mar learn anything, learn a Braisa about the subject of a Sachir, this worker who claims he wasn't paid yet? Amrle in, Rabba Shmuel answered, yes, Tanina. He learned a Braisa that says, Sachir Mizmano, worker, as long as it was within the allotted time period during which the employer is supposed to pay. It's not yet overdue. He claims he wasn't paid his wages yet. Nishpa v'notel. The Rabbanan gave him the right to swear and collect the wages, even if the employer is saying, no, I paid him already. The Braisa explains further, Ketzad. What's the case exactly? Bizman she'amar lo sechar tani v'lo nosata li sechari. The worker is claiming, hey, you hired me. I did the work. You didn't pay me the wages yet. V'halo omer. The employer responds, charticha v'nosati l'chascharecha. No, I paid you already. In this case, the Rabbanan gave the worker the right to swear and collect. Avlo omer lo. But if the worker said to the employer, if the dispute was about how much the wages were, sh'tayim k'tzatza li, the worker, let's say, says, you stipulated wages of 2 salayim for the work, the employer says, no, we only agreed on 1 selah. Here the halacha is, this worker is trying to extract another selah from the employer. He's claiming he owes him another selah. He has the burden of proof. Unless he can prove that that was the agreement, he won't be able to collect that additional selah. The Sheshes infers the following from this braisa. Ha midseifa biraya. Since only in the seifa, in the second case presented in the braisa, does it introduce a requirement to bring proof. Savireisha below raya. The implication is that in the first ruling of the braisa, the worker can simply swear and collect without any proof. It is, he doesn't have to first establish that in fact the employer hired him. So what does that mean? It means that we're even talking about a case where there were no witnesses that this person was hired at all. And yet, if they have a dispute about whether the worker had been paid, the worker still has the right to swear and collect, which would be not like Shmuel and Rav and others said above. Apparently, we don't say this Miga. We don't say that, oh, since he could have said it and hired you at all, the employer is simply believed to claim that he did pay already. It seems from the Raya that that's not true. But the Gemara deflects the proof. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. He says, continuing to Mem Vav Amar Aleph, really, Reisha v'Seifa b'Raya. Really, it's not like you're saying. And you know, even the Reisha case here, the first case, really it does have to be established through witnesses that the worker was indeed hired. Because only then is the employer not of amigo. And in that case, the Rabbanan said, the worker can swear and collect. So if that's part of the case, why wasn't it mentioned in the Reisha, in this first case in the Braisa? The Gemara explains, and that's simply because Raya de l'shalim ketani, if you're discussing a necessary proof that is needed in order to actually collect payment, as the Sefer discusses, that's worthwhile to mention. The Sefer says that this worker can't collect here in this case, where they're disputing about the amount of the wages, unless he proves that. If he doesn't prove it, he can't collect. So that, of course, has to be mentioned. But Raya, this Shvua Loketani, as opposed to in the Reisha case, where the proof is a prerequisite to entitle the worker to swear, that's more of like a background proof. He can't take advantage of this shvua until he first proves that he was hired at all. The Braisa felt that that's simply not so relevant here, that basically the law is that the worker could take an oath, so it doesn't actually mention the proof here. It only mentions a proof where what you're saying is this employer will not have to pay unless the worker brings a proof. That's what's happening in the Seifa, so there it mentions it. The point is, we could say the Braisa really agrees that we only say in the Reisha that a worker can swear and collect if, it first has been established to witnesses that indeed this worker was hired. Then there's no migu. Then that's a case where the Rabbanan enacted that being that, there's a little more credibility to the worker because the employer gets busy with his other workers. Therefore, the worker may swear and collect the wages.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.